welcome to the first in a new series of the Economia podcast. I'm Richard Creed, Editor-in-Chief at Economia. In this podcast, we've got a report from last week's World Congress of Accountants in Rome. We also investigate why senior UK Conservatives are having a pop at the tax credentials of the new EU Commission President. We look at the Public Accounts Committee's latest report into HMRC's effectiveness on tax avoidance. And we'll be discussing the first set of results from BDO PKF. So with me to discuss all of this are Economia's online editor, Raymond Doherty.
Hello.
News editor, Julia Irving.
Hello.
And online reporter, Ollie Griffin.
Hello.
So hello, everybody.
Hello.
This being effortlessly topical, let's start with last week's news, which was, of course, the World Congress of Accountants in Rome, somewhat mysteriously referred to as the Olympics of Accountancy. I'm not sure whether you saw much running, jumping and swimming, but you were both there. So what was it? Tell us about it. What was it like?
I didn't see too much running, jumping or swimming, but it was an interesting week. Most points of interest for the profession were covered. There were delegates there from across the world. But what I thought was quite interesting during the week is that the financial crisis still looms large over the profession.
Really?
Yeah, and obviously we're financial services in general. I find that there were a lot of talks that specifically concentrated on the effects of the financial crisis, but also that a lot of talks, whereas they may have started off at one point, by the end of the discussion had moved on to how the profession regains trust. But yeah, there were some interesting questions posed that I don't think were answered fully. Obviously, it happened last week. There was the Forex, the news that the banks have been fined by.
It wasn't great timing.
No, it wasn't, and it just so happened that 5 minutes before a talk on how auditors have protected banks. So it wasn't exactly the greatest timing, but yeah, there was certainly some interesting discussions.
Ollie, what did you?
Yeah, I mean, much the same, really. Something that I seem to notice when I was talking to Thomas Müller, Marcus Berg from EY, he was talking about the recession and basically said that the industry was still very much in shock, which is why we're still talking about it now.
Right.
It's not just so much a fear of another one happening in the next couple of months or years or anything like that. It's that they can't quite believe that it still happened.
Right.
Which sort of led him to then
explain.
At all?
Or they can't believe it happened to the extent that it did?
I think a bit of both, really. He was very keen to point out that various audit committees, they couldn't find what was wrong. It was referred to as a sovereign debt crisis for most of the crisis, but he was quite keen to point out it was actually a balance sheet crisis,
yeah,
and it was
absolutely.
When they were reflecting on what they were looking at that they realised the extent of the damage that had happened to all the sort of global economies. And that actually led him to then go on and sort of call for greater government and public accounting transparency.
Okay. Greater tax transparency,
yeah,
effectively.
Yeah, definitely. And he's sort of very impressed with the UK's annual tax summary. I know that's coming for some criticism at home, but he said that to put a cost on it would be completely the wrong perspective, and actually the government should be sort of applauded for its efforts in bringing tax to ordinary people.
Okay. Well, I think you've put together a little report talking to some of the people, so let's have a listen to what you got up to in Rome.
So, if you could speak your names as well, please.
Ken Goldman.
Carol Calandra.
Simon Henry.
And so, I'm just sort of wondering, where do you think we stand in terms of financial crisis right now? I mean, some people say we come out of it, others not so confident.
Well, I just give you an opinion. I think we've fundamentally come out of it. I think the reason I say that is the debt rates have come significantly down, volatility significantly down. I think the challenge is different. The challenge globally is how to, you know, facilitate growth. Growth is still subpar almost across the world.
Okay.
That's my line, I'm sticking to it.
I think it varies depending on the level of restructuring that took place immediately post 2008, 2009. The US is probably furthest advanced because it took more rapid and more deep actions in terms of recapitalizing the banks. I think the UK is probably following now, and you can see it in the GDP stats. I think Europe is still struggling with the restructuring that's necessary, the recap of the banks. The bank stress tests were passed, but there's still a lot of question marks about the ability of the banking sector to lend into the economy, and that is acting as a real brake on growth. And I think emerging markets, there are some challenges in some of the financial systems there as well. So I don't think we're out of it globally at all, but I do think there are quite a lot of lessons about act early, act deep, and then recover on the basis of much more a solid and robust platform rather than just kicking the can down the road.
Yeah, I would agree with Simon. I think the reality is we're not fully out of it, but we're certainly much better than we were several years ago. You see the economy doing little fits here and there, and it has ripple effects still across the globe.
Okay. I would add one more thing. I think psychology is very important.
Oh, great.
I think about a couple of months ago, we saw rates in some of the countries spike up all of a sudden, and then they came down. And so it's clear that positive psychology helps, you know, give people confidence. But on the other hand, it's still pretty, I don't want to say volatile, but it's still pretty tough to ensure we keep confidence up.
Okay. And one other thing, the Financial Reporting Council in the UK, Stephen Padgett, he sort of blamed the councils in a way for not spotting things faster. Do you think that's an unfair accusation?
Well, I don't want to take on any government official, that's for sure. I just think there's, you know, like anything of this magnitude, there's a lot of blame to go around. And I think no one can sort of say their house was clean. And I would just leave it there. I think, you know, and so I don't think any one profession, I don't think anyone, banks, I think even consumers and some of the debt that they took on that they shouldn't have taken on were ill-informed. And so I think there was blame across the board for what happened. And so I'd prefer not to put blame in one particular profession or group than to say I think all were to blame. And I think, you know, accounting tends to call it as it is historically. Accounting, in terms of, you know, the job of accountants, is not necessary to forecast. And so I think you have to just differentiate that a little bit.
My name is Thomas Müller-Markesberger. I'm an EY audit partner and the global leader for international public sector accounting.
Okay. And so in your speech earlier, you're talking about global transparency, the need for governmental transparency. And I don't know if you're aware, the UK government has just sort of launched the first annual tax summary, where they publish and post a breakdown of everyone's tax contributions throughout the whole country, and they sent them out to 24 million people. I just wondered if that's the sort of thing you're looking for with engaging, opening up public finances.
No, absolutely. I think, as I said in my speech, kind of providing the numbers on the basis of accounting standards which are reliable and internationally acceptable or internationally accepted is only one thing. The most important thing is kind of to translate that into kind of digestible, understandable messages for the broader public. So on one hand for the politicians, but on the other hand certainly for resource providers, and the most important resource providers are taxpayers. And therefore I think kind of translating that in messages in a very condensed way, which are understandable for taxpayers, is exactly the way we are looking for.
Very interesting. Particularly interesting to hear the guy from Yahoo talking about the fact that responsibility was kind of laid at everybody's, or should be laid at everybody's door. I think he said no one's house is clean or something.
Yeah.
You know,
which
is an interesting take on it. Good. So on for 4 years, and I think it's in Athens, isn't it? In four years' time, something like that.
The home of Olympics.
So maybe there'll be more running and jumping next time. Ollie, you've been busy also looking into the PAC's latest report into HMRC, and in particular HMRC's performance in terms of tax avoidance. Headline news seems to be it's not great for HMRC, or they're not doing a good enough job.
Well, Margaret Hodge, in her role as chairperson of the PAC, has carried on her legacy of basically slamming HMRC and HMRC's efforts in anti-tax avoidance strategies, quoting her today, HMRC's action against tax avoiders continues to be unacceptably slow, putting tax revenues at risk. She's referring there to the Liberty and Icebreaker cases that happened earlier this year. For those of you that don't remember, that's where a lot of celebrities and others were caught out with tax avoidance schemes and have subsequently had to reach agreements with HMRC since then. But
good old Gary Barlow.
Gary Barlow, I think George Michael as well, amongst others.
Michael Caine.
High profile.
A lot.
Katie Melua.
Yes, but she actually...
Okay, people, before we, go, before we get too far into this competition, other...
Let's just say celebrities.
Some celebrities.
But Hodge is basically saying that more needs to be done and faster, but obviously this is she's speaking from a luxury position of an opposition MP to an extent. I mean, HMRC are constantly coming under scrutiny with tax avoidance. New schemes are being brought up and invented and invested in on a regular basis. So while, yeah, there's a lot of delay in bringing people to trial or to tribunals, that seems to be an issue. It was a good five years or so between when Icebreaker was shut down and when the first proper sort of cases were being heard. But it is evolving and changing.
Other people have condemned her for bringing morality into it. I think, Julia, you were talking earlier about.
Yes, I mean, the idea that morality plays a part in all this is something that's espoused very much by the sort of charity side of things. Professionals tend to look at it rather as being something to do with the law, and they don't want to have law made by morality, law changes based on morality. It doesn't quite fit the picture.
Yeah, I mean, I think the legal stuff is far more, it should be pretty black and white, shouldn't it? Once you get into morality, you get into these shades of, no, I don't want to say shades of grey, but you get into much murkier waters, I suppose.
Yeah, that's actually something that Bill Dodwell was saying at WCOA, the Congress. He said quite guardedly, actually, that it's not very sensible for government ministers to criticise businesses for operating under a commercial sense. He did also allude to the hearing where Deloitte partners were brought in front of the PAC, so I'm fairly confident that Margaret Hodge might be earmarked for that particular comment, in that he's saying basically that businesses need to be left to make commercial decisions and pay tax appropriately. Saying that government ministers need to sort of leave them alone when it comes to making these decisions, and it's not sensible for them, especially with internet companies, to open 250 sites worldwide and pay tax in each of those areas, when actually, because of the internet and because of its business acumen, it's only sensible to have three areas.
It's interesting that he says that too, but because it's been covered so widely, I suppose we're part of this as well, covered so widely in the media the last couple of years, it is actually affecting the bottom line of businesses. So we saw that immediately after Starbucks were in front of the PAC, I think it was in late 2013, the Q4 profits were down in the UK following, you know, those 2 months of being on the front pages for their tax affairs.
But that, because their revenues were down, because people have turned away from them as a...
Yeah, so suppose they're one of those...
Reaction against
Yeah, them. A reaction. So their reputation took a hit, and then they saw that on the bottom line.
Then you get into an interesting area where potentially customer-facing brands actually have more responsibility, because reputationally...
Exactly.
Their impact's going to be more than kind of obscure business-to-business brands, possibly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But
especially something like Starbucks, where you have that obvious choice in the high street where you can just turn away from one and go to another. So,
It's been a taxing few days, thank you, for the European Commission President, Jean-Claude Juncker. This weekend, some senior Tory MPs, or ministers even, have kind of raised some questions about his suitability for the role, seeing as his kind of previous roles as senior or as Prime Minister and previously finance minister. That's the word, not finance director. The finance minister in Luxembourg. Ray, you've looked into this a bit. What's the lowdown on this?
He faced some awkward questions this week at the G20 in Brisbane, where he came out with a great quote, which was basically some journalists were asking should he resign, which apparently he dodged, basically straight bat at those questions, but eventually did answer a question, and the quote is, "Sometimes tax evasion just happens," which which I think might have been the quote of the weekend.
Nice.
Yeah, so this sparked the discussion again here in the UK, and talking to the BBC at the weekend, Ian Duncan-Smith and Grant Shapps both said that they would welcome, or they would suggest that the European Commission should investigate his role in Luxembourg, or his suitability for the role, considering what's come out about Luxembourg. So,
serious, do you think, or is that a bit of pre-by-election puff?
Yeah, it certainly could be, and as everybody knows, David Cameron was fiercely opposed to Juncker getting the role in the first place, so this is their first chance to really kind of stick the boot in since he's had the role. So it could be a bit of that, but it could be one to watch as well and see what happens.
To see another point from the PAC report, I think, was that they are basically accusing the UK government of hypocrisy because it's claiming to have this leading role on the international tax campaign, and yet it's introducing practices, well, not practices, changes in the law in the UK that could be seen as harmful practices.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the Germans are not overly fond of the patent box, as an example, are they? I mean, that's, it's potentially, fundamentally, you get to the point where you drop corporation tax lower and lower, and that's a positive thing for business, and I totally understand why you would do that, but ultimately we've got a lower rate of tax than you've got, which is
the race to the bottom.
Absolutely.
Julian, myself, were at the PAC conference 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think it was, and Stephen Herring, head of tax at the IOD, his suggestion was, and I've heard him mention it before, that there should corporation tax should be completely scrapped, which is an interesting argument, which would get rid of that race to the bottom.
Okay, let's move on from tax and on a potentially brighter note. I think this week the newly recently, I suppose, combined BDO and PKF have produced its first set of first full set, I suppose, of annual accounts. Julie, this is one you've been following. Top line is not bad at all.
In fact, turnover is up by 27% and operating profit by 42%, which means that average profit per partner is up to $275,000 a year, which is not bad. I mean, in comparison to the big four, it's not so good, but, hey, this is number six ranked in the country. And I think that it's the first year that's fully reflecting the results from the merger, which was completed at the beginning of April last year. And at that time, the firm predicted that it would be growing by about 20%, so it's exceeded all expectations. And that's been, I'm sorry to bring it back to tax.
No. The tax practice.
The tax practice has done rather well. But actually the star performer was advisory, which has gone up by 39% to 157 million on the back of complex forensic projects, transactions and M&A, which is probably in the middle market where the firm is particularly focused. It's a leading auditor on AIM. And audit went up by 19% to 128 million. They are gradually building market share. Obviously, regulation has shone a light on audit, and there are lots of audit tenders which it's being invited to join in. It's not really making inroads into the larger firms in the FTSE 350. At the moment, they audit about...
In terms of audit?
Yeah. They audit about, well, it's just under 3%, and they want to build that up to 5% in the next 5 years. But it's quite difficult for them because, of course, everybody's used to using the big four all the time.
Mm.
Now, they do a lot more advisory and tax work for the FTSE 350, and they're hoping that, you know, slowly but slowly, that they will build up their audit practice.
So what was Simon Michael's perspective on it all? How?
Well, I think he's rather delighted.
Is he?
I bet he doesn't earn the average partner.
Possibly not.
Well, he said it's been a combination of the merger, which they're all really, really thrilled with. It's been the recovering economy. He says that throughout the recession, they invested. It was their policy to invest, unlike most of the other firms, and they're really reaping the results now. And he said that it's been a team effort, and they've all pulled together, and they've got really excellent people now because they've invested in people as well. He's looking to the future. He says there'll be more growth, but he's not complacent about it. He says we have the strongest balance sheet in the mid-tier, which gives us financial stability to invest for the long term. He says they've invested a lot in new technology and services for the clients, and that should further strengthen them as they go forward into 2015.
Yeah.
A happy
all
man.
All looking pretty rosy, isn't
mm.
it? So, it's interesting. I wonder how many of the other big, or particular one I'm thinking of, another big merger that happens, I suspect might not be quite as rosy over there.
Are we talking about
Baker
Tilly? I don't know. One hears rumours about the firm. It would
be interesting to see when
yes.
they must be due to report soon as well. So,
yes.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Okay. Well, we'll keep an eye on...
Watch BDO next year.
Yeah,
mm.
indeed. Finally, I think it'd be interesting. Our next podcast is due in a couple of weeks on the 3rd of, or 4th of December, just after the autumn statement. So I thought it'd be interesting to have a quick look at what people are hearing in terms of predictions for the autumn statement. I mean, the broad picture financially seems to be, obviously, things are perhaps a little bit slower than expected. Finances a little bit worse than expected.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's an election in May, so it's kind of going to be as much political manoeuvring as you can possibly squeeze into it, but not a huge amount of space to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know, some northern infrastructure projects seems to be a popular topic at the moment, but anything anyone else is hearing, any particulars, any requests or desires that people have got?
Yeah, speaking of BDO, I spoke to their head of tax, Richard Rose, yesterday about what he expects. He gave me some interesting stuff. He feels that it will be quite a quiet autumn statement in terms of headline grabbing tax breaks. He doesn't think there are going to be any, and he seems to think that the headline stuff such as personal allowance, the 50p tax rate, inheritance tax, they'll be held back until either the budget or when the manifestos come out or when the campaign proper starts next year.
Okay.
So he said don't expect too much on that.
No big pre-election giveaways.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah.
He doesn't think so. I haven't heard anything from anybody else on that at the moment. So, who knows? It could be a surprise. Last year, nobody was expecting, or in the budget, nobody was expecting the big pensions announcement.
Mm.
So, what he is expecting is you mentioned Peyton Box earlier, and that the George Osborne was in Germany a couple of weeks ago. Over Peyton Box, he expects a consultation to be announced on reforming Peyton Box.
Okay.
A few other things, some business rate cuts for smaller businesses, and that the big push will be that the UK is one of the early adopters on the OECD BEPS, base erosion planning. Action plan that they haven't produced at all, but the parts they have produced that Osborne will say that we're tackling tax avoidance. Look, we're one of the first adopters
yes,
of this,
yeah.
So you know we're trying to.
So it would be an autumn statement for the makers and doers and the shapers again.
Exactly, yeah.
I don't know what the headline will be this time. But. Ollie, have you heard anything?
Well, I'm sure they'll shoehorn in more than one place long-term economic plan with or without a hashtag on a few occasions. I'm hoping, really, that they do sort of focus maybe on the second phase of HS2. I think I think the high-speed connection between the northern cities makes probably more sense and faces less opposition than the one between London and the north, connecting east to west rather than north to south, seems to be a much more popular move.
So jump to that stage, wherever it is, HS3, before they do HS2, you mean?
I don't know if they'll do that, but I mean, throwing some more planning that way. The commission, which was published very recently, was very, very positive about HS2, phase 2 and HS3. Mm. So it'd be interesting to see if they boost infrastructure. I mean, George Osborne's been clamouring for a northern powerhouse for the last couple of months now.
Yes.
Along with his various other secretaries and ministers, Danny Alexander as well. So it'd be quite interesting to see if they put some money into that this autumn. Mm.
Julia?
There's a lot of thought about the ever-increasing debt and interest. Mm. I know that ICAW has been talking to its contacts in government about the possibility of getting finally a chief financial officer with commercial experience from the private sector into the Treasury to oversee government spending.
This is the fabled CFO at the cabinet table.
It is indeed. Still trying to get his seat there.
Yeah, well, I think it's a really worthwhile area to look at.
Yes. And I think they're hoping the fact that the interest repayments, what was it, twice the education budget.
Yeah.
That will persuade the cabinet that finally that it's something that really is needed, because who better to come in and look at the efficiencies of the departments and to do more cuts, because that's what private sector does all the time.
I think it'd be really interesting how honest, probably in inverted commas, George Osborne is about the figures. I mean, I think there's a lot of skirting around the really bleak or the blackest parts of the budget. The whole government finances generally seems to be, and there's lots of independent economists forecasting doom and gloom, but you know, the extent to which we're really getting a true picture of how bad a state the finances are in, and whether that's the size of the task, I guess, that's, you know, everyone initially in 2010 the story was it's all going to be resolved by now, and suddenly it's extended to 2018, and I think in reality we're looking at 2020 and beyond before it's...
Not to be too cynical, but I would suggest not that honest until
probably
next
not.
May, I would say.
Yeah. The doom and gloom approach doesn't really...
No.
It's not working for a Miliband so, or Red Bulls. So. Brilliant. Well, I think that's probably all we've got time for. It's worth adding we'll be live tweeting and live blogging during the autumn statement. There'll be a full set of analysis pieces on the Economia website, and a set of predictions and stuff as well, so you can start to catch that coverage fairly soon at www.icaw.com/economia. I think ICAW have also got a lot of its expert commentary is going to be available on the day, and they're doing some really interesting things this year, so it's definitely worth catching the icaw.com/budget, I think is the URL for that. Well, thanks to Julia, Ollie and Ray, and thank you for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks for the Autumn Statement Special. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.